Hello and welcome to this episode of the Superhero Ethics Podcast. Friends, today we are going into nostalgia because I was a kid in the 80s, and while I was a kid in the city, I went to movies and TV shows that showed kids on bikes fixing problems. It was the classic thing, and I was also a kid who played Dungeons & Dragons and had people thought I was a demon worshiper because I played Dungeons & Dragons. And so I got a couple of my friends together. We're gathering around a table. We've got our D20s. We've got our character sheets, and we're going to be talking about Stranger Things Season 3. All that more with Ashley Coffin and special guest Mark Garcusha right after this commercial break. We have no control over. Welcome back. This is Matthew. I'm your host, they, them pronouns. I'm joined by one of the regulars here at Superhero Ethics, Ashley Coffin. Ashley, how are we doing today?
I am fantastic. I'm so ready to talk about this.
Definitely.
At first, you brought it to me and I was like, oh, but we didn't do any other seasons. And when we try to do a show, we like start at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like that's why we're episode 310 in True Blood somewhere in the middle. Someday we'll get back to it. And I didn't want that to happen with this because everybody's been asking for it. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad, and I had an idea. I was like, oh, Mark really likes this show.
I do.
Let's do this so we can talk about everything.
Mark Garcusha is our other guest. Mark is a voice actor and the host of the Cast Die podcast, a D&D podcast. Mark, great to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really, really happy and excited to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, and yet, as Ashley said, I would love it if we could give you episode by episode coverage of Stranger Things going back to season one or just this season. But as I've read out this list a couple of times already, releasing in June are Kenobi, Ms. Marvel, Stranger Things, The Boys, Umbrella Academy, Top Gun, and at least one of the one other thing we want to talk about. So I would like to see my significant other somewhere
or
in there. Yeah, exactly. There's just
too.
So much content.
Yeah.
But I was able to watch all of this and get to chat with you guys about it. So let me kind of just start. Before we talk about this season, what have been kind of your overall thoughts on Stranger Things? And Mark, I'll start with you because you're a real D&D expert and you podcast about it. What was your take on this podcast that was really kind of putting D&D front and center? The TV show, I mean.
I love it. I really like it. I know, like, some people were like, oh, you know, season one was great, and then season two and three were meh, meh, meh. And I disagree. I really, really have enjoyed every single season of this show. It really grabbed me right from the beginning. It's very, like you said, nostalgic for me. I was a kid riding bikes. I wasn't solving problems, but I was riding a bike around and pretending to solve problems
exactly.
In the 80s.
We are going
to
find probably dead bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, they're surprisingly harder to find than movies and television would lead you to believe.
Right?
The
bullies were always there, though.
Plenty of bullies. Not as mean as they are on TV and in the
not
movies, though.
Not Kiefer Sutherland level.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Yeah, yeah. Not Angela level of season four here.
Oh, I know.
That's a new topper, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Her and the head basketball player
right.
Out for blood, those two should get together and be like the ultimate power couple that gets taken down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you'd really been enjoying this and kind of all the D&D references and...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think...
Good.
I was gonna say, I think it is a big part of the reason that D&D has had the level of resurgence it has, you know.
I didn't know playing that was what was going on in the first couple seasons. Like Demigorgon, I didn't realize like all that stuff was from D&D until now going back. I don't know how many years ago did this start.
As far as I can tell, the D&D resurgence has had three main influences. This show is one of them. Mm-hmm. The pandemic and just people wanting a thing they could do was a second.
That's when I got in it.
And this is actually a number of people I know, the Community episode was the third one that like my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, he got a bunch with his friends. They're like, we love Community. Let's like kind of ironically have some fun with it. He now goes down to his local game store to play every Tuesday night. You know, so I just
amazing.
Like, it's awesome.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, Dan Harmon, the creator of Community, is a big D&D player. He had his own show there for a while. Harmon Quest was like him and a bunch of his friends playing D&D. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, Ashley, what about for you? So for you, it wasn't about the D&D. What would you really love about the show the first couple seasons?
The 80s horror movie references.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was so, it's very hard for me to get into a TV 14 show about screaming children. Mm-hmm. That's probably my least favorite thing in the entire world. But, you know, after like season one, I was like, okay, they're fine. It was really good. They're doing, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street stuff. You have E.T. references and Poltergeist and just everything. And they really did such a good job with it. And their opening, like, we never turn off the opening. It is the perfect. All of the sounds they use are just perfect 80s sounds. We let that run every time. So, yeah, it's definitely the more horror aspect for me. But now, you know, getting into D&D more, it makes it that much more fun. It's the references, it's great.
Well, and I kind of love this because the three of us, I think there's like a number of different things that made the show so good. There's a Venn diagram, and it seems like we all love all of it, but we each have a focus. Like, you know, D&D or horror, for me, it was the relationships. Mm-hmm. Like I did love those shows about plucky kids who the cops never believed them, the teachers, the parents never believed them, but they still figured it all out anyway. Mm-hmm. And I also I like coming of age stories. I like puberty stories. And for me, that was so good, especially I think in season one and two. I do think it's kind of lost some of that in this season, which is why and season three, which I think I didn't like it as much. But I think to me it was that, and then also you said all the nostalgia, like seeing the kid. You know, I was that kid. I was that kid who the basketball players bullied because I had all the D&D books. By the time I was in high school, it was D&D was becoming Vampire the Masquerade. That was like the new cool thing. But yeah, that was who we are. Eddie is exactly a character I know so well, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I love him.
I just love the kids, and I love the geekiness, the kind of like they're all, you know, a little weird but in their own wonderful ways, and it's been a lot of fun to grow up, watch these kids grow up that way.
Yeah, it's a little harder to capture that coming of age feeling now that the actors are all in their 30s.
Yeah.
What do you always say about it, Fox? You have the best like description about what happened to the kids.
Oh, yeah. Puberty hit them with a truck. Like,
that was it. Because especially watching them, I watched all of them in like 3 days. And it's a little polarizing by the time you get to even two. You're like, whoa. But by three, like I also didn't recognize. I was like, wait, what's that kid's name? Yeah. Oh, that's Will? I was like, I thought that was like a mix. It looks like Daniel Radcliffe skipping around in here. I was like, what's going on?
Will and Jonathan now look like they're the same age, which, you know, I think can sometimes happen because actors just age differently. Mm-hmm.
It's correct, though, I guess, right? How old are they? They're 18. No, some of them are like 19.
When it started, there were very distinctly two generations. There was the Nancy and Jonathan and then Steve generation.
Steve.
And then there was the Will and Mike and Dustin and Lucas generation. And like, I think they're still supposed to think, but yeah, Jonathan and Will were the two who most seemed like, okay, these actors are close to the same age, but hadn't hit puberty yet. And now they have, and now they kind of look more like equal.
Yeah. Will really shot up.
Do you mean Mike instead of Jonathan? Jonathan is
that's
Will's
what I'm saying.
Brother.
Jonathan is Will's older brother, but they look like they were the same age in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you thought so?
Yeah.
Oh, in this one.
Will
looked like
a baby in that first season, but now he's definitely like the one who like shot up and is now like bigger than the rest of the cast.
He had that cute Elijah Wood look, which made him really likable. You're like, oh, you know, you're just like, you know, little Elijah Wood with those big eyes.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, I'm like, really? With the hem on the shorts, kid? Who's picking out your costumes?
They had to give him an extra goofy bowl cut this season to make him look not like he's not 6'2 and 180 pounds.
Well, and I think that was part of why we can get into like I want to spend a lot of time talking about like the D&D references and the horror references and all that. But just I'll start with saying I think I didn't like this season as much, in part because it felt like our core characters. First of all, they were never in the same place. And granted, this is only the first half, and I have to remember that. But it definitely seemed like Will and Mike were being sidelined somewhat. And I they didn't appear at all in this last episode. And I wondered, do you think that maybe that is part because they have grown up a lot more and the writers were like, we can't really have like those two, Dustin and Lucas, be like, you know, the Four Musketeers because they all look like they're such different ages now?
I feel like if you watch three specifically, they are all split up in that one too. Mm-hmm. And kind of in two as well. Like they start doing that and then they all usually come together. But I feel like And as I think they know what the people want to see. And I want to see Steve and Dustin and their interactions and what they're doing and Nancy and mm-hmm. Eddie more than, and even like Erica, like the stuff with Mike and Ellen and them this season. I was like, okay, until they took Elle, I was like, I don't care about this at all. Can we please get back to the other crazy, scary stuff, which makes this season probably my second favorite season because it was so dark.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they just were like, they're all going to come together. But at this point, we're getting to the end of the series. So I feel like they're giving everybody kind of like their screen time.
That's fair.
I think it was more like calculated.
And yeah. MHB, like, just it wasn't for the story for me as much, which is totally fine. But I definitely like,
yeah,
like I figured out why we were spending so much time in Russia. But to me, that was the one where I was like, I do not care in this, especially because to me, and maybe we can kind of get into this. Maybe here you know better. There's a D&D thing here. You know, I spent the last couple of years going, well, maybe Hopper's not dead, but if he's not, I want to know what happened. Like, how is it that this thing that should have killed him didn't? And instead we just got, oh, it didn't kill him because it didn't kill him, but he's captured by Russians. Let's deal with that. Did I miss something big or did they just...
No, I thought the Americans sweeped that compound, too. I don't know where those Russians came from, but prosh.
Yeah.
Forward.
They got him. They got him somehow.
Uh-huh.
Was that German?
Yeah, I definitely wanted more on that. Yeah, so that. What about you? Did you all love that plot line of, like, you know, the airplanes and the prisons and Ashley's a fan?
Yeah, I am too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's cool.
I love Maury, Murray and...
Brett Gelman is a guy.
Joyce, yeah.
Brett Gelman is amazing in everything he's ever been in. I saw him in, like, another period or, like, Drunk History is where I first noticed him. I'm like, that guy's hilarious.
The other guys... He's great.
Yes.
Yeah. Even like the double cross with whatever, I can't remember the
Yuri.
The Russian pilot.
So funny.
That was great. I thought the drugged coffee was good. It was a fun
when he
sequence.
The karate. I loved the karate part so much because you don't expect it to work, and he's just like Cobra Kai.
And you realize he's the only adult in his class. But then he does beat the shit out of the guy. Like
he's trained.
Yeah. I love that.
Okay, cool. I'm glad people did. I think actually you and I are the different because I was definitely into all the stuff with Elle and Will and Mike and kind of what's going to happen with them and the bullying and stuff like that. But to me, the Russia thing was where I just got.
I get mad when characters who have been through as much as they do don't tell each other the truth. But it's every show. It's never not been a show. Like Supernatural was the worst with it. But all the things you've been through and you're just lying to each other and you could have just gotten to the point. It was so like the awkwardness was so awkward like when he got to the airport. And it kind of stayed awkward for 3 episodes and then they split them up. But the fight was important. I think we were supposed to feel that way. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I will say on the flip side of it, I did, because I'm with you, I don't like when people just lie to each other and they never tell. I thought what they did, and I was starting to get to that point with Max of like, just tell them why you're upset.
Yeah.
100%.
And then I thought they did that beautifully, of her going into that area, them pulling her back with the music, and then her saying, I was afraid to talk to you, you know, but then they actually did talk it out. And I was like, great. Mm-hmm. But then we never got anything more about Max and Lucas together.
Yeah.
So I was like...
I think a big part of the reason, and I'm saying this as someone who, you know, unabashedly loves this every single episode of this show ever.
Which is great. Like,
I think part
that.
Of the. Oh, no. Thank you. No. But like, I think part of the reason I think that what you're saying is true in that we do kind of like lose some of the focus on some of the, you know, the main characters. Is that this is the first time where we have a villain with like a personality and a backstory and like and everything. So
it's that little twink vampire from Twilight. I couldn't believe I was like, that guy.
Yeah. Oh, he's great.
He was one of the Mwaha vampires. There was like these 3 old ones and one of them actually was like Mwaha at one point. So he's Mwaha. Just Mwaha.
I can't think of the actor's name.
Great.
But he does a great job of being like at first sinister. You're like, oh, it's creep. And then he's like, oh, no, he's not a creep. Look at how he's helping Elle. He's a good guy. And then you're like, son of a bitch, he was a creep all along.
Why did I trust you? Just why I don't trust people.
Yeah. And I thought he gave a really great performance.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him in anything since those dumbass Twilight movies.
I think we'll probably see him.
No, they're good. You know, they're okay.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen them, but yeah.
People like them. People I don't want to get the Twilighters after me.
Yuck anybody's yum.
Like the beehive.
We actually have a podcast about it where we talk about like why people love it and why people maybe find them more problematic these days. And I think I hear all that. I also think for me, some of this may be kind of just a general thing I don't like in the direction a lot of TV shows and movies are going these days that this kind of played into, which is that, and I kind of I don't blame Avengers for this, but they were one of the ones who've done this. I love team ups. I love the dynamics between people. And it seems like more and more what TV shows and movies love to do is say, okay, here's a team. But no matter how many times we get them back together at the end of last season or the end of the last movie, the next one, we're going to break them apart again. And you're never really going to actually just get all of them together.
Yeah.
And because then the big bang won't mean as much. Because then you're like, yeah, Elle showed up and threw that car in the mall. And you're like, yeah, everybody's back together. And then Hopper shows up and steps on that fucking thing.
Oh,
excuse my language.
That moment was so
sorry
good.
Sorry about you.
No, this is an explicit language one because frankly, like
our TV-14
if there's
movie,
a 13-year-old who watched the heads explode, I think they're okay with hearing the language. And if the parents are upset at the language, but not them watching the heads explode, well, there are parenting choices of yours I'm going to raise some questions with. So,
yeah,
I'm like, we were born in 84. So that was just, you know, how. Yeah. What do you mean?
Exactly.
Well, okay, so why don't we, does anyone have any other more general thoughts? Or thinking maybe why don't we kind of go through each of those groups and talk about kind of their storyline and what we thought of it and also the references and all that?
Okay.
Ashley, do you have another general comment you want to make?
Let's outline this. Okay. Give me some topics.
Cool. Yeah.
Let's start with Elle because we do have, her journey of like being awkward and then meeting up with Mike. And for, let's start with all that even before she kind of gets kidnapped and taken away. What was going on with her story? How'd you feel about it?
I thought it was really interesting seeing Elle without her powers and like trying to adjust to normal life in California. And when she made the little diorama with Hopper and the squirrel, I was crying, of course, because I cry in commercials these days. Not even sad Angel. Ones, just for anything. And then, like I said, Angela already, but like there is very few times where I look at like a you know, whatever 12, 13, 4, however old child, and I say I would fight that child on sight, and I would shrink myself down to an appropriate size and just fight that girl.
I had that experience before in a roller skating rink. I've told you the story when I was dressed like a pink Power Ranger for our school's Halloween skate off at CN Skate Palace in Aston, Pennsylvania. Everybody started making fun of me so bad, but at least I had my mask on. But then the security told me I wasn't allowed to wear my mask and skate. So then everybody felt like I had to take my mask off. And everyone saw it was me, and I had to go. I called my mom, and I waited in the bathroom for her to come get me because they were so mean. Aww. I know it was between Storm and the Pink Power Ranger, but the Storm one, my mom's like, "That one's 59, this one's 29. You're the Pink Ranger," and I was like, "Cool." Oh, it was the first. It was so terrible. So in my head, I wish I like watching that happen. I was like, "Yeah, break that bitch's face." I would have grabbed her by her hair and swung her in all of those little girls skating around me and rubbed their faces on the ground. Sorry.
I remember thinking to myself, I hope that the show isn't wanting us to think Eleven is in such a bad situation that she overreacted. Because I don't think she, like, I'm a pretty big believer that bullying is violence. And it does harm.
Absolutely.
And what she did is 100% self-defense.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's not in question.
And also,
I would have used my fists, but
yeah, if I had telekinetic powers, I would probably use them too. But I don't.
Yeah.
And at that point in the show, we were still kind of like under. I mean, at least I felt like I was under the impression that Eleven killed all those kids in the beginning of the show. You know,
right?
So like there,
I said to Ken, I was like, "No way!
Yeah,
no way she did that."
No, yeah, no, I didn't think so either, but. I felt like we were supposed to.
Then
kind
they
of think
showed
that.
Her do it, and I was like, "Uh-oh." So
yeah.
I think for me, there's two reasons why I really loved what Eleven was going through in that. I mean, not that I was happy to see her suffering, but One is just that, like, I do think bullying in schools is getting more attention as, like, something that's not just like, oh, yeah, it's funny and it's too bad, but let's get revenge on the bullies. But really looking at, like, bullying does real harm.
Yeah.
People in their 20s and 30s can still be in therapy for the damage bullying did.
Yeah.
And I don't, again, I don't, like, to me, on the one hand, yeah, like, fight back in self-defense. When I see a kid like Angela, like, I don't want to say this 12-year-old is just born evil. Something's happening with her parents that's allowing her to think, like, that this is an acceptable way to treat people. But so I loved that. And also, I just, you know, I feel like media is paying a lot more attention to neurodivergency and what that looks like. And sometimes what it does is things like with someone like 11, where maybe it's not that exactly, but the situation of the social cluelessness and the, like, the unawareness of subtlety and
she doesn't speak well.
She gets teased.
Yeah.
To me, like, I've had a number of neurodivergent, I'm neurodivergent myself, but I felt this, but I've had a number of other of colleagues and friends also reach out to me and be like, I felt so connected to 11, you know, in that diorama scene, in the kind of, like, because to me often, like, I don't think it was even that she was lying to Mike about it. I think, like, on some level, it's like, well, Ashley does pay attention to me. So maybe we are, Angela, maybe we are friends. Maybe we're,
Ashley, I was like, I'm the bitch.
No, I'm mixing her up with Ashley from The Boys. Because I could see this as.
Okay, fair.
This Angela could go with Ashley from The Boys. But yeah, so I just really appreciated that part of her character in this.
Yeah, yeah, I did too. And I think you really strike on something there with the kind of relationship to neurodivergency. And I think that is a big reason a lot of us identify with that. And it kind of brings me back to something that, like, I've heard a lot of people say about, like, Will and Mike in this season, but, like, Will in general, that he's, like, been sidelined since season one. He hasn't really been doing anything since season one. And I think, like, what I really love about Will's character is that, you know, as somebody who was, like, still into the kid stuff, you know, when all my friends were not into it anymore, like, that resonated so strongly with me of, like, can't we just play D&D? Like, no, we're, you know, we're like, we're going, like, I have a girlfriend now and this and that. And, like, I think it's just, and it's a credit to the kid who plays him. Like, he's a great, that kid can shiver very well. Do a terrified shiver.
One of the best out there. Some good ones.
But it really is a testament to him as an actor and, like, how well I think. Oh, God.
Like the exorcism scene.
Oh, my God,
scene.
In season three. Oof. Yeah.
I think you make a really good point there. And it actually kind of ties into what we're talking about before and maybe kind of part of why he was that character who was, like, he hadn't quite hit puberty yet. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he wasn't feeling these feelings towards other people. I think some people raise the idea that maybe it's because he's feeling it more towards boys than towards girls, which I think would be fun to explore with him, but doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. But
I think they've made that pretty, they've definitely insinuated they just need
I think so.
Just do it.
I think, like, so if he's supposed to be that character who's kind of the last one to be, to go through puberty and wants to sort of still be in that, like, let's be 12-year-olds, but then the actor, as we said, has become, you know, 6 foot, 180 pounds, and looks like he's ready for prom.
Yeah,
maybe writing that character is difficult.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm Will. Yeah. Next season five, they're all going to be like, hey, guys.
Can we just play D&D?
Hey, Wheeler, cut it out, all right? Seriously.
That being said, though, I did think they did a really good job. And here again, it's the actor being so good. That third wheel position, you could make him just angry about it. But the way that he was both like, it sucks to be third wheel, but also I care about you both and I don't like you not talking to each other. I just was really touched by him in those scenes.
Same. I think that there, and that this is again part of the reason I love this show so much. I think that there is, like, that aspect with all the characters, you know, like in the same way that we have that. I had, you know, that kind of empathy with Will in that role. Also with Lucas in this season where, like, he has, like, found something that he's, like, popular and he's in with the popular crowd. Like, I had that experience too of, like, you know, I was the theater nerd. I was, you know, whatever, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also, like, hanging out with the cool kids, you know? And so I had that experience of, like, you're friends with those theater kids? And I was like, I mean, it's an easy class, man. You know, it's an easy, you know, whatever. I'm failing too many other classes. I got to take this class.
I played rugby in college, so I was like, I had my foot in the jock world and my foot in the geek world. And
I think it's just awesome how well these characters resonate. I think.
And they're portraying high school perfectly. I didn't even think about, you know, that. Because, like, I was also in theater. And it wasn't until, like, maybe 10th, 11th grade when you started just kind of being friends with everybody. Like, you're kind of smoking pot. And you're just hanging out with everybody. And then you're in every group. But then there's always that one group. They're like, you talk to them? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, what? Oh, I mean, like, no, not really. I don't sit with them.
It's also just a nice reminder of how much things have changed. You know, that, like... Because today, D&D isn't, like, there's still, like, you know, the jocks and the preps versus the everyone else. But, like, you know, from everything I see from, like, Gen Z and all this kind of thing, like, video games and D&D and comic books, like, that's cool. Like, that's not the thing that gets you ostracized anymore.
Yeah.
Once they made it virtual, it became, like, you know, like, when people started playing over Zoom and D&D Beyond and all that stuff, it really made it so accessible to just be able to, like, it's more fun in person. Yeah. Forever.
Oh, yeah.
More fun in person. But it's still fun. And everybody, you know, it's easier. You got kids, not me, but other people, you know, you can still manage it.
Hardison's right. Age of the Geek, baby.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
It's time.
The one last thing I'll say about that part of the story, then we can move on to the next one. One of the things that I think I sometimes love is stories about teenagers where in one part of their life, they're dealing with monsters and demons and like evil witches, whatever it is. And in another part of their life, they're dealing with puberty and high school. And there's this kind of humor of like, clearly one is technically worse.
Yeah.
But actually, I don't know, you know, and like whatever you want to say about the author, horrible as she is. I think it's one thing Harry Potter got so well, you know, the scenes of like Harry and Ron being like, dragons are bad, but teenage girls are scarier.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, and we hate each other, but we're really helping each other.
Yeah. And like seeing boys. Elle realize that like Angela is almost scarier than some of the monsters she's faced in some ways. Like I just thought that was so well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
So, yeah. So then she gets kidnapped and kind of taken away to, you know, the House of Horrors for the fun kids that's under the desert. Mm-hmm. Or what'd you all think of like the, and that's kind of like the whole main plot for her for the rest of it. What'd y'all think of how all that played out?
Well, Matthew Modine, I want to know how you survived that Demogorgon, because we sure left that out. And why is he lying to her? Or am I getting that wrong? That was my question I had. Is he lying to her? Because she's like, I killed all those kids. He's like, yeah, you did. Why is he lying to her?
I mean, my working theory is that it was because he needed her to unlock that memory in order to have the like emotional breakthrough to get her powers back.
Okay.
But that's just a theory.
Okay. Do you think Paul Reiser knew that? Because that makes a lot of sense with him being like, we're traumatizing this little girl.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, he was like, he was trying to stop it at various points, and Papa kept going with it. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he just didn't believe it would work.
I don't know.
Or didn't know if it was worth it. He's fantastic. Also, Paul Reiser. I'm so happy he's back in like a major way in this season.
Mm-hmm.
He really is.
I thought they were going to kill him in the beginning.
Yeah. When I thought they were going to kill him in season two.
I was like,
to be honest, but.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that was the other part of the show that really threw me. And again, this is just different expectations than like, but I think especially after Elle was treated so badly there, having Paul Reiser show up and it being like, no, look, I'm on your team. We're here to support you. We're here to help you. This is your choice. You don't have to do it. I was so ready for Elle has a nice day. You know, I was so ready for it to be like, and so I think then it was like, oh, nope, Papa's back. I was like, really, writers? You couldn't do something better? You had to go to the back. So, and again, it's just stylistic, but I hated that. Like, that plot line just totally lost me.
It was the kick in, but it was also so emotional for us.
Yeah.
It makes you connected to the show and different. Like, you're like, oh, he's alive. I don't like to call him Papa, so I'm going Matthew Modine.
That's fair.
Because I love Matthew Modine. Yeah. But I was just like, God damn it, he's alive. And then you're doing it to her again, and you're in the outfit again. Oh, God damn it.
And then it gave us that amazing shot of when she gets the powers back there for a minute.
Oh, and the so good.
Lights explode, and the evil orderlies get smashed into the ceiling. We got her hair cut back. You know, I think we all wanted
yeah.
that.
It's
oh,
the
no,
way.
I hate it. And I guess like, that makes me, like, when you said that's where we connected, I was like, really? Because to me, that's the other, I checked out. That's when I think I started to check out, when I was like, okay, so you're not actually doing anything new. You're just giving us the same old stuff again. But that's, you know.
But they have to make her go through that to get her powers back, which is just a plot. I don't know.
It could be more from the positive side.
They're the scientists.
But, yeah. Well, so help me explain this. This is the part that I got lost on at the very end. Did all of that with, like, number one actually happen? Or is that all just, like, her sitting in the chair with the brain machine on and it's all, like, happening in her head? Because I thought it was all really happening, but then at the very end we get a shot of her still in the chair and Matthew Modine watching her. And that's where I was confused.
I thought that was just her having the memory of what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because the side story with Nancy showed us that kid was definitely
Victor Creel's son.
Yeah, right. So it was like the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so little girl 11 was the one who sent number one into the Underdark.
Into the. And right. She created the Upside Down. Pretty much, I guess.
That's a big question.
Right.
Did she?
Because that's how
or was
I saw
it already there? Because if you remember in, I think it's season two. When Dustin's talking about, like, I think the Upside Down has been there for thousands of years, maybe millions of years, maybe it predates the dinosaurs.
Yeah, right.
So,
well,
like,
it's stuck for them in 83,
right? From the
which is weird.
Yeah.
So that would have been
one,
when
yeah.
Will was taken, not when she.
When
wait, that happened at the same time.
Well, no,
no, because she was already her
getting out.
But that was the first time the Upside Down really came into the real world. So real world going into the Upside Down happened in 79.
And then it's
but
time
then when
stops.
It came into our world.
Oh.
I don't know. I would love to know the answers. Time travel.
So somehow Venkman.
Venkman?
Venkman. Yeah. Maybe he's older than he looks, or he just didn't really age much. Like somehow while he was number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, or now he's just monster freak.
Because he's he's like six in like 1950.
Oh, yeah.
So it's about 20 years later. He's probably like 26 something. I think that would be 20.
That would be fair.
Mid-20s, late 20s.
I don't know. Everybody looks like they're 18 to me anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair.
I'll give it a goot. That kid's probably like 30.
I'm kind of just going to throw out questions at this point. We can go on back to the specific characters. And Mark, you might know this better, or Ashley, you might have figured this out. Part of what also, in season one, I didn't quite understand if what they were saying was that, to me, I kind of saw that three possibilities could be happening. One is that D&D is real. You know, that somehow, like, these kids playing this game summoned this creature. Two is that the people who wrote D&D somehow, like, had, you know, like the stories of these creatures had entered into folklore. And so that's why the stuff in D&D connected to it. And then three was just that, like, it was just a super weird coincidence, or that, like, they were just using D&D as the metaphor to describe these things that were totally different. By this point, especially, like, the fact that, like, it wasn't even the monster manual, as far as I understand. Eddie creates this wizard character, the evil wizard, who winds up looking exactly like this the creature that they were dealing with. What's going on there?
Well,
do you have a theory on that?
Well, Vecna is a established D&D character.
So that wasn't something Eddie made.
No. Vecna. Yeah,
okay. Our Demigorgon student?
Yeah, the Demigorgon. Yeah, okay. The Demigorgon is actually
Mind Flayer. No, definitely is
Mind Flayer. Mind Flayer is an original. Mind Flayer and Vecna are original D&D creations. I know the Mind Flayer, the Illithid, was created by Gary Gygax. I can't remember who exactly created Vecna, but the Demigorgon is actually like a real. I mean. "Quote unquote real demon from history." Like if you look back, like the Demogorgon's mentioned in like Paradise Lost, I think, or there's like
really,
yeah.
That's interesting.
A lot of the demons, and this is part of the reason the Satanic Panic was such a big thing, was like a right. lot of the demons and devils that are mentioned in right. Dungeons and Dragons are based on real, again, yeah,
they
quote
make
unquote
up vampires and werewolves.
Yeah, that's
exactly. In the same way, they take from all different types of folklore. They took, you know, these demons and devils from Judeo-Christian history. But Vecna is an original character. We can talk about Vecna for a second.
Let's
I think I have what might be some original ideas here.
Go for
so,
it.
Vecna is very interesting because at first, Vecna was not like a character. There was two like artifacts in Dungeons and Dragons. There was the Hand of Vecna and the Eye of Vecna. And they were supposed to be like the only two things left over from this ancient undead wizard, a lich, that was destroyed, but it's still his hand and his eye were like these hugely powerful artifacts. And if you think about it, in season one, you have the Demogorgon, who is kind of could be considered like the hand of Vecna, in that it's like this like powerful thing that like is out there causing trouble. And then in season three, the Mind Flayer, season two and three, the Mind Flayer is like described as like the spy, they call it sometimes, and it like takes control of people. And the Eye of Vecna is a thing where like if you use it, you have to like pluck out your own eye and put in the Eye of Vecna.
Give me the eye.
Give me the eye. Yes,
see.
Exactly. But if you put it in, it gives you all these powers. But anytime you use one of the powers, there's a 5% chance that it's going to take over your body.
Oh no!
So there's some really cool kind of like.
I think I remember reading that when I was like 12 in the AD&D book or something like
that's
that.
That's cool.
Yeah, there's some really cool connections there, I think, with Vecna.
So does Vecna work for the Mind Flayer? So would he be like the boss before the final boss?
Vecna is like a god.
A
demigod.
God.
At least.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would be the other way around. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They don't strictly speaking in D&D canon work for or with each other, but like it's very interesting because you know, it was a character who was never like actually involved in the story. They were only like history until there was a module written in like 1990 by Zeb Cook called Vecna Lives, which is what Eddie Munson says in that, you know, when in that first D&D session that they have. He said, Vecna Lives. Oh, no. And now.
And everyone was pissed.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's. There's a lot of cool D&D stuff going on in there.
I loved that scene.
Oh, it's so good.
That looked like the most fun D&D. He had his little...
And now they were...
I want to talk about all that, but I still don't have an answer to my question.
Not yet.
Oh.
What was the question?
What's the relationship between the game of D&D, the game these kids are playing, and the actual monsters that are happening in the world?
So I think we kind of skirted around it there a little bit in that like the Demogorgon is something from history. You know, but it has been adapted into D&D. And so, like, you could be partly right in that, you know, maybe the Upside Down is hell. Maybe, like, some, you know, long ago mystic saw it. And, like, you know, there's all this kind of stuff and bleeding over. But I think it's also, Ashley, like you were saying, just, like, the lens that the kids use to, like, make sense of it.
That's what I was thinking.
Because they're like, that's a Demogorgon, and it just happens to fit the... Because they were like, that's a lich. He's like, said first it was a wizard, a dark wizard. Is that what a lich is?
A lich is a wizard who, in their power, mad desire for immortality, trade their humanity for, undeath,
okay.
basically. Right. They're very powerful.
Exactly what happened here.
Okay.
Right? Oh, so good. So it could be. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe we won't. But I love it.
And one of Vecna's names is also like the Lord of Spiders, or he like sits on the throne of spiders or something, which is interesting.
Oh, God.
Because the kid is obsessed with black widows, which is crazy.
Spiders being the highest predator. Okay.
Right.
I think that makes sense. And I'm willing to buy that there's kind of a coincidence of like the kids are fighting a Demogorgon and then they meet a creature that looks like that. And now, like, Vecna looked an awful lot like their drawings of it. So that's where I was kind of like, is there something actually happening here? Or is this just a framework that the kids use to make sense of all this or what's going on?
I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Yeah.
And I think The column C is the writers doing it for us.
That's right.
And frankly, that's one thing that I think I would be okay with. Like, the idea that everything has to make total sense and be explained. I don't think the new MCU created that, but I think MCU kind of made with the whole thing of like everything's going to have a kind of scientific explanation. It became a much bigger thing in movies. Like a lot of these 80s movies, you never got an explanation of how all this fits together. Mm-hmm. It was just eerie and weird and strange and we don't know and move on. And
yeah. Right.
Well, I see a lot of people complaining about 8 because we see number 8
right.
in season 2, but then she's not in these memories. And I was like, well, we don't know how many of these memories are manufactured since he's making her see this other stuff. Or maybe she just wasn't there because she obviously was in a different room
right.
with 11 at that point. Right. I don't know.
She could have escaped by that point, too.
Lots of questions. I hope maybe. She shows up, though.
I would like to see her again.
At least in the last season.
That would make a lot of sense. Let's talk about Eddie, because he is far and away my favorite new character. He's up there with Steve.
It's fantastic.
That doe-eyed, beautiful bastard. I love, and I'm like, he's 30. It's okay.
You
I kind love
of want him.
Him
to be 30 for the way you I feel about him. Him. So that's good.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, with your little poodle haircut,
he can be the
I
Luke
love
Perry
you.
Of this generation.
I get mad when I see him with his real hair. I'm like, no. Give me that no. Eddie Munson shaggy curl mullet thing.
I felt like he was such an important character because he was like we've gotten. I feel like they're bringing to life all the different people I knew in high school, all the different people I was or could have been or was like, and like we've had. The shy, awkward kids. But then there is that one kid who is like, you know what? I'm awkward. I'm weird. And I'm down with it. And I'm going to look like...
Yeah.
And I'm Punk a rock. Badass, you know? And like, he is a god to his local little group. And they all look up to him. But to everyone else, he's still the weirdo. And they hate him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the head cheerleader still would date
that,
him.
I was so mad she got killed early. Because I was shipping those two so hard.
I know that. The chemistry.
And I love that he's the local drug dealer, and that's never the show is never like he's a bad person for that. It's just, he's helping kids
How
get weed.
Yeah,
okay, that's what he does.
No, I would have asked her when she's like something stronger. I'd be like, "Have you taken Special K before? Like, what's going on here?" But he was just kind of like happy to be in her presence, so he wasn't asking questions.
Well, even the earlier the pot, he was like, "You know, it's okay to back out. I won't be mad." Like, you think of all the things that in that situation, normally the dealer's like, "No, you brought me out here. You have to take this. You have like," it was none of that. He was just a genuinely good kid. Who has some ego-ish stuff?
Don't give her.
Because to me, like, it's not that I think he's socially that he's not socially awkward. I think that like you can deal with being socially awkward the way a lot of the kids do of kind of shrinking and hiding, or you can deal with it with like, no, I'm great, I love everything, you know?
Yeah.
Theater.
Yeah.
That
was a really really awesome scene because they set him up as like this like total like. Badass, like owning his outsider persona and just being crazy and like everyone's kind of scared of him. He's scary. And then that scene with Chrissy in the woods, he's like, I'm scared of you. And you know, so it gave us this really like, wonderful look into that character. He's almost like an allegory for Dungeons and Dragons too. It's like, it's the devil and oh no, watch out. But then it's just like, no, I'm just a kid who's like, I'm scared of you too. And like, let's be friends. And I'm
creative.
And like,
I really love that scene.
All of the best dungeon masters I've played games with, I was a little scared of. Like I watched his setting. I was like, I would play in this guy's game. You know, I mean, maybe not Jeff.
Oh yeah.
But like,
Jeff was like, we'll talk about it. Let's have a democracy. I'm like, is that how it's supposed to go?
I also loved that, because especially the way they set it up, at first you might have thought, okay, this is the obnoxious kid who's too into his own power,
right.
and he's power gaming, and that by the end of it, the kids are going to find they can play D&D without him.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, when you learned that, like, you know, when Dustin and... who was the other one who was in? Oh, Mike. Because, he trained. That when Dustin and Mike were new to the school and didn't know anyone, he kind of adopted them. He helped them feel better. Like,
it's like, you're going to pass it on as I military crawl out of here.
Yeah.
I loved him.
Yeah.
So yeah, what'd you think of what else was going on with that group of people back in Hawkins still?
Steve, I'm going to talk about Steve for a little bit because I feel like I remember I commented on something and someone was like, we didn't like Steve in season one. When I watched season one again, that's not true at all. Like he straddled that line of being with the popular kids and his group and then doing the right thing because like his friends were the ones who kept doing like the shitty things. Like they wrote that she was a whore, they wrote on the marquee. But then he defended them in the alleyway. He still got into the fight with Jonathan because he said some things he shouldn't say. But then like the next day, without anybody saying anything to him, he went and asked the marquee guy, like, can I help you wash that off? And then he became the babysitter by the end of that season.
Yeah.
You know, he showed up when Nancy and Jonathan were in the house and the Demigorgon showed up. Oh my God. And he got destroyed.
Yeah.
And then he was just in, you know?
He is my favorite. Mark, go ahead. I've talked a lot.
Oh no, I'm agreeing with everything that Ashley was saying, and I think what you were going to say, Steve is obviously the favorite. He's the mom, you know. I'm your mom now, and I love him.
I feel like they've given him such complexity because you're right. He could have, like, if it's the it's one thing I love is that they're taking the 80s character tropes, but then making them so much deeper. Because in the 80s trope, he's the awful guy who eventually the girl realizes he shouldn't be with her. Mm-hmm. She should be with the dorky guy.
Yeah.
And what I liked is that we saw he is a decent guy who has to learn some things, but he's a pretty terrible boyfriend.
Right.
And so I both liked that he was a decent guy, but that Nancy was still like, I don't want to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is,
well, he kind of was at first, but if you watch that first season again, there's like this switch, like after they go through everything and going into season two, she decides to stay with Steve because he does do that. That 360 had already started. He's there for her. He's supportive, but she has already fallen in love with Jonathan.
Yeah.
So she kind of breaks his heart pretty early on in season two. But he did.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
It's all bullshit.
She's like, I don't love you.
It's all bullshit.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Well, what I was going at is, because something I've been talking about a lot on this show and others is, I love a good redemption arc, but I think a redemption arc has to be earned.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, you do one good thing after a lifetime of being terrible, that's not a redemption arc. Like, to me, like, Avatar, Last Airbender sets the gold star of that. And I was watching, and I was like, yeah, if in season two, she had gotten back together with him, I'd be like, you haven't earned this yet. Watching him and Nancy start to reconnect, I was like, at first I was like, no, actually, you know what? I'm ready for this to happen. This is earned.
No, I don't know.
And giving that to us over four seasons, I was just like, this is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a little storyline that doesn't make sense to me, that they've only been gone for less than a year. And Jonathan's already like, I don't think I want to be with her, man. And I'm like, why?
Well, he's worried about not getting into the school. Yeah.
Not being smart enough to go to school.
And I got that as part of long distance, you know. And the scenes of like both of them saying to their friends that it was the other one, like, to me that was heartbreaking, but it felt so real. You know,
Then I don't want her to string Steve along. And then when Jonathan shows up at the end, when they all get back together and she just breaks Steve's heart again.
Yeah.
It's not what I want.
I didn't.
No, you I think they're going to stay together?
I didn't know anybody. And this show is, I think, good at you know, doing like outsized portraits to portray high school relationships well. I didn't know anybody who was in long-term relationships when I was in high school, but I do remember my freshman year of college when like everybody had a boyfriend or girlfriend back home and none of those relationships made it through freshman year, you know? So like,
no,
they're separated.
Yeah. We used to joke at my school that the best song to understand the situation of the people who've come to college with a boyfriend or girlfriend back home is the Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, Love the One You're With. And like, that's another thing is like, you gotta remember, this is before email. This is before like
FaceTime.
Susie and Dustin might instant message a little bit, but like most people don't. So it makes when it's phone calls and letters, long distance relationships are so much harder. And even just going back, like the whole thing about Mike not saying I love you in his letters, like 14-year-old kids are idiots. They don't know how to communicate with each other. They don't and they misunderstand each other. Like I didn't blame Mike for that. I just thought these are two idiot kids who don't know how to communicate.
Yeah, I thought she was asking a lot of him.
That's fair. That's fair.
I felt bad. But he did say it first, though. But she wasn't in the room. Yeah. God, these kids.
I remember someone complaining about Jonathan just like smoking pot all the time with Argyle. And I was like, he's 20 years old. Like, that's exactly from like 15 to like 22. That's all I did was smoke weed with my friends.
All I did was smoke pot. Yeah. Behind the Toys R Us, at the mall.
I wish my friends were as cool as Argyle. And
we also listened to
him. He's the best.
I know.
Another
sleeper
character.
So awesome.
There. Amazing.
That hair.
And I love that him and Eve got to hook up. And that was just like a fine thing, you know? Like, because
that was awesome.
Susie's Mormon family was glorious. Like,
that was fun.
Susie, that's it will shock you to know. My favorite scene in all four seasons is when she makes him sing the Never Ending Story with him, and they sing the entire song. My favorite scene. I was on the ground. I was like crying.
I watched the end of season 3 today. And yeah, there's like the Battle of Starcourt is going on. You've got like a Russian laser reactor thing is opening a portal to the netherworld, but it's like, let's take 4 minutes to have these two 14-year-olds sing the theme from Neverending Story, and it's amazing. I was like,
Joyce is banging her head the door.
It's crazy how well that scene works.
Yeah. And I was at home like, reach the stars, you know. and I sang it today at my friend at work down the entire hallway, and I didn't know other people were there. And my manager sent me a text that just said, "Stop."
And I think
that.
I will say about it, I love that scene, but I also felt so seen because I think I felt so represented because I think it was Eddie. One of the kids says, "Oh, Neverending Story. Yeah, that movie terrified me." And I was like, "Yes, I have no idea why that movie. I have never finished it."
Yeah.
No, it's supposed to be scary. Yeah. The wolf is very scary. The nothing is very scary. That's why we're a tougher generation than these little
snowflakes. I'm not
going to
go that far.
But growing up with Teletubby. Well, think about the Neverending Story. You think about Legend. You think about The Dark Crystal, Willow, all of these children movies that had very real adult situations that they're like, kids movie, watch this 1,000 times. And I was like, I want to be the evil quieting Bev Morta. Yeah. And they wonder why I am the way I am.
I mean, I don't remember anything making me sob when I was a kid the way Up did. You know, I think that there's some like...
The Blob made me cry like a little girl.
The Blob was scary.
It was very scary.
Well, all right. So while we're talking about these kids, though, and like the whole Hawkins plot, my sense is, Mark, that that's the one that has the most D&D references, because that's what Dustin and all them are hanging out.
Yeah.
Talk to us. What do we miss if we haven't memorized the Monster Manual?
Okay, well, here's another thing. And when I watched season 4 with my fiance, and she likes to watch things with the subtitles on.
Yeah.
And I have come to accept/tolerate it. I don't like it.
Can't
if I'm watching by myself, I don't do it. But it's okay. it does make it easier to eat snacks while you watch a show. but there's several times in season 4 where the word eldritch is used, like eldritch humming or eldritch music.
Interesting.
Yes. And I think one of the big questions is like, where the F, we already used our one F word this episode.
Curse again.
Okay, good.
Okay, we could
do
it.
We're going hard R. Fantastic. I thought we were doing PG-13.
Hard R.
The one fucking time.
No X because the video isn't going out anywhere. So I'll keep
okay, good.
On, but
good. Good. So we've been talking about where the fuck do these telekinetic, psychokinetic powers come from, and in Dungeons and Dragons, Eldritch is used a lot. Eldritch Blast is the number one spell of warlocks, and warlocks get their power by making a pact with an otherworldly being. And if you remember in season 4, there's that, I mean, obviously he's just a really creepy fucking kid. Now I'm using it too much. I'm going to dial it back. he's a really creepy kid. He's sitting there with the candles and the spiders in the jars, and it looks like he's almost like communing with something, you know? So maybe it's hit. It's maybe one. I can't remember the kid's name, who's always had that connection with the Upside Down, and Eleven just pushes him into it.
She sent him home.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would like that, because I and for our Magic the Gathering fans, which is the geeky world that I probably most inhabit, Eldritch Moon was a whole world of Magic the Gathering that was mostly based on this world of Innistrad, which already was kind of like dramatic horror wolves and werewolves and vampires and spirits and all that. That now there are these, like, you know, godlike beings that people can make pacts with, and hence that's the Eldritch horror. So yeah, right. Like, I love that connection. Because to me, there's something just like this kid just spontaneously realized he was super powerful, and so he killed his whole fam. Like, it felt like there was something missing, and I love what you're saying. Like, that warlock thing of, like, because one of the things I love about the warlock class in D&D is you don't have to realize what's happening.
Right.
Like, for geek, like, one of my favorite characters I've created was a cleric who thought he had discovered a new god and doesn't realize he's a warlock because he's, like, in a pact with, you know? And I kind of love that for this kid, that maybe, like, he thinks he is this powerful, but actually there is this, you know, it's not Aldrich. What's the name of the being from D&D that the kids think, that the big bad in Eddie's game?
Oh, Vecna.
Vecna. That maybe Vecna, like, has kind of, like, made this kid his servant, you know, or something like that. Or gave Vecna human form or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, in D&D, Vecna, deep lore, Vecna made a deal with Orcus, who is, like, the lord of the underworld, who is also, like, another, like, again, I'm doing the finger quotes, quote unquote, real demon from, like, the Bible expanded universe books, you know, not the main ones, but
them Genesis.
Yeah. So Orcus is the one, the prince of hell or whatever. I gotta crack open my monster manual. Who, like,
I know, like, Paradise Lost is right there. Yeah.
Who teaches Vecna, like, the secret of undeath. So
cool. You know. So the Upside Down could have been there for a very long time, and he finally used this kid to break through.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that, and I really hope that's what it is.
Me too.
I love possession.
I'm kind of leaning more and more towards the idea that maybe the first person to get pulled into, like, that. I don't think they'll actually do this because it's now dealing with real life people. But, like, to me, the headcanon is that the first person who got pulled into the Underdark was Gary Gygax. That he had, like, some kind of crazy experience in the Underdark, came back, read Lord of the Rings, and put the two together, and was like, here you go. You know? I kind of love that idea.
And also, because you mentioned Lord of the Rings, and that is definitely, like, one of the biggest
The elves
influences.
And dwarves and stuff.
Yeah, elves, dwarves, they, Ents.
We got to talk about Sean Austin.
We're going to talk about hobbits. We got to talk about Sean Austin, Bob Newby, superhero. I'm crying. Jack Vance is a sci-fi / fantasy author who wrote the Dying Earth series. And Vecna is an anagram of Vance. And it is a nod to what a huge influence Jack Vance's books were Gary Gygax and then Dave Arneson and, you know, Dungeons and Dragons as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're saying Gary Gygax, and I'm used to being Gary Gygax, and I'll trust you because you're the more D&D person here. It's Gary Gygax?
I don't know. I feel like I've been saying it for my entire life, but only actually hearing it for the past 5 years, so I don't know.
Okay, I didn't mean to call you out. So.
No. I can't remember.
I just want to
know. Is it Gygax or Gygax? It's definitely one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which one,
though.
That's fair. You're going to take away my D&D card.
Now, you're...
I have a complete side note. The cops in Hawkins are the worst.
Especially in this season.
Like, they're just...
They're so mean.
They're so shitty. But they are kind of... Those two are consistently shitty throughout all of the seasons. But this time, like, really bad. Children.
Yeah. I think they're real... It's, I think, another one... Again, there's a lot that I love. I feel like part of my frustration was they introduced so many new plot stories that I wanted to get more of all. And I had to keep, like, I got about halfway through the last episode and I was like, really? There's going to be all these plot holes? Oh, wait, no. There's a whole second half of the season. I am going to remember that. But, like, to me, I'm so fascinated by this idea that there's two different government groups, you know, and the cops are kind of caught in the middle. I want to get a lot more about that. Because you're right, the cops in this.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I rolled my eyes a little bit about how quickly, like, the mob of vigilantes going after the kids is.
Yeah.
But definitely, I mean, the satanic panic was a real thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids are dying in Hawkins.
And I did live in a small town, not in Indiana, but in North Carolina, where everyone was obsessed with the high school athletes. Like, that the high school athletes were the most important thing in our town. So, like, well, it is a little goofy, you know, that was Jason is able to walk into that meeting and, like, totally take the power away from the cops and be
it's here.
Satan is here among us. And come on, rednecks, help me fight Satan. And which is, you know, if anyone's going to do that, it's rednecks. They'll help you fight Satan if you ask them to.
I just watched again the first season of Ozark, so be careful saying redneck. It's really dangerous for you.
I do have red on my neck, so I can say it.
Yeah, and I hear you. I mean, I was in New York City. I was in a very liberal place. Like, I didn't have a whole panic, but one of my friend's mothers called my mother and was like, "Why does my son think he's a vampire? Like, you know, what are you allowing your son to do?" And my mother was drunk and probably gave a pretty terrible answer, but, you know, he wasn't allowed to come to my house for 2 months. But
a friend, and I wasn't allowed to hang out with a friend anymore, but I brought actual spell books and black candles, and I was like, we're going to do a whole thing.
Yeah.
Let me see your hand. Safety pin. And yeah.
I
was a real witch.
Just on that thing of, like, the high school kids being so honored, I think, again, it would be really easy, and this is what a lot of the 80s movies I love did, to say, nerd's good, jock's bad.
Yeah.
And that scene where, you know, you're lining up for the final shot of the game as you're lining up to roll the final dice of the game.
Yeah.
And
beautiful.
To me, it showed them as both so beautiful.
It was an amazing
scene.
They
both can be awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that scene.
Mm-hmm. Erica is one of my favorite side characters.
Yeah.
I just love her. I love when they're running out of the house and she's like, it's only a mild misdemeanor.
Yeah, yeah.
Cop car tire.
Like I said,
when she owns Eddie.
And I just finished season 3 today, or refinished season 3 today. And there's that whole discussion between Erica and Dustin in the vent when they're escaping. And she does, like, this crazy math equation. And he's like, you just did that in your head? And he goes, you're a nerd. She's like, no, I'm not. And he, like, does this whole thing to, like, prove she's a nerd.
You watch My
like,
Little Pony.
She's like,
Pony.
How do you know all this stuff about My Little Pony? He's like, because I'm a fucking nerd. And then at the end, the end of season 3, which is easy to forget because there's so much that happens in that episode. But Will, puts his D&D books into the donate pile because he's like, I'm not going to play in California because I only want to play with you. And then they have the scene of Erica opening the box and, like, pulling out the red box, like the original D&D rules.
I missed
it.
Mrs. Applejack or whatever.
I think that's really cool.
Aww.
And then also helps answer something we talked about before about, Will hanging out with the pot smokers kind of makes sense because, you know, he doesn't have his group that he used to have. You know, he had D&D was his life, and now he's looking for something new. And he's actually not the same age as them because he's supposed to be Jonathan's younger brother, but we're kind of forgetting about that, you know. I just thought it was all so well done.
So here's
the question I have to ask Ashley, both as our resident Steve Thirst person, although I'll join you with that, but also
he's 30.
But
I'm
also
allowed. Timothy Chalamet has
our
one
resident,
more year.
Hair in movies and TV show expert. Is the chest hair real?
Yes.
Or was that okay?
Oh yeah, no, that's real. That little angel. He was like, I'm not doing it, I'm not waxing it. I could have. Yeah, okay. It looked very real. Because it was just so...
I did appreciate the show knows its audience, that it found a very good reason for him to spend a lot of time with his shirt off, and I don't think people complained.
I thought we were going to talk about his hair, because there's nobody with better hair than Steve. Throughout the seasons, it evolves and changes. Ugh. Like, Eddie's is good, and Mike kind of has Eddie's hair this season, because you can kind of tell he's, like, looking up to him now, so he's got the bangs and the long... But one of my favorite scenes was Eddie telling Steve how much Dusty looked up to him, even though Steve was a little jealous of, like, the time with Dusty. Because you could see that, like, Mike was going full Eddie, like, this guy is awesome, he's my favorite. But, like, Dusty will always love Steve.
Yeah, when they're looking for the sub for the game, Steve was the first person Dustin called.
Yeah. He was so happy when he got back from camp. They had that thing I tagged you and Katie in when he's like, high five.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It's so cute. Robin's like, idiot or whatever. What does she call him? It's something very specific.
Right. Yeah, I can't remember.
Blank. Your children are here.
Yeah. Moron.
Moron. Yeah. Your children are here. Moron. She's like, how many kids are you friends with?
I'm definitely liking Robin. I like that she's kind of our new... Was it Barb, the girl who died in season one, Nancy's best friend?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Nancy's got a best friend. There was a little bit of a moment where I was like, is Nancy maybe going to learn some things about herself and wind up with Robin? They didn't go there, which is totally fine. But if Robin doesn't wind up with a girl from the band by the end of the season, I will be very annoyed. Like,
her,
because also, like,
that's
you want to talk cliche. They're not on the softball team together, but the band is pretty damn close. You know, for people discovering that you know, they're into the same gender. Well,
this one time, now, I love that they brought the singer girl back. Side note, because they were talking about that in season two. They're like, she sings like shit. And then she
came
back. What a
terrible singer she is.
And then she did.
And she sang,
Hawkins Zone.
You mentioned Barb, which...
Poor Barb.
Justice for Barb, justice for Muse, justice for Bob Newby, justice for Alexi.
Mm-hmm.
All that to say,
Alexi.
Right? I cried. All that to say, who's it going to be in season four?
It can't be Steve. I already thought it was going to be Steve twice. So
I think
he's getting out of this one. But I also think he'll sacrifice himself to save Nancy.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it's going to be Will.
I will be devastated.
You think it's going to be Will? Wow.
I think there's also that Will and Eleven both need to die for this to be done.
Yeah. Real quick, one more D&D thing. Mm.
Yeah.
Those creatures that attack Steve when he's pulled through, those are Sturges.
Mm.
Like,
okay.
Clearly, those are Sturges.
So do they poison you or put things in you like what happened to Eleven in the third one? Or is he going to be okay?
I think they just drink blood. I can't remember if they have like a poison thing in D&D.
I was worried
or not.
They were going to put something in him like when Eleven got bit.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't know. I am very worried about Steve. I'm worried about Eddie. I'm worried about everybody because my heart's been broken so many times by this show. Well,
it's probably not going to be Nancy.
Nancy and Steve are endgame. I think they have to be together.
But Steve might die trying to save her.
No, I'm wrong. You know who's going to die? Joyce. And I realize, I think that's what the other thing is. To me, what Joyce is first, like, I like getting to see her with Murray.
How dare you do that, sir?
Her as a mother,
I did not expect
is
that.
So good, but no, she's going to die for her kids. And it, because think of it, that's the final passing of the torch of the queen of the 80s movies, you know, is going to die to protect the new generation.
I want to find a reason to argue.
I can't find it
with you about that, just because I hate it, and I don't want it to
that
happen.
That never crossed my mind.
Because I love Joyce and I love Winona Ryder.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in love with Winona Ryder since.
You and I are people of the same
generation.
Yeah. For me, gold bikini Princess Leia was never like original Princess Leia was it, but then Winona Ryder stole my heart.
Lydia.
I watched the movie Heather many times.
Yeah. I know what my damage is. I love her. Mm-hmm. And that's a quick just actor talk. The fact that like David Harbour has gone on record saying that like Winona Ryder was his crush. Like, you know, he's he was born like 75, I think. So he's like 5 or 6 years older than me, and Winona Ryder's a little bit older than that. So like, there's an interview where she's talking about how like she wasn't attractive in the 80s, and he's sitting next to her, and he's just like, "What
are you
the
serious?
Fuck are you talking about?"
He's the guy who plays Hopper, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Hopper. Yeah, David
he's
Harbour.
A
yeah.
Gem.
He's great.
I also just like that's. I've seen him escape from Russia. I watched that in Black Widow. I didn't need to see it again.
And his name was Alexei, which made me laugh. Maybe that's why it seems so. We're like, we know what happens here.
Oh,
but
I felt
terrible for him.
Yeah, that was a real. Yeah, it's been a tough time for Hopper.
That character. Oh,
every season's been
gone
tough for Hopper.
Through so much with his daughter dying, and I feel like he hadn't talked about it in a couple seasons so long that I forgot. So his conversation with a man who has no face, I don't know what his name was there, but that was his Game of Thrones.
Anatov. Yeah.
Who I was so happy to see that Game of Thrones guy. He's great. That was so deep.
But he could be the one who dies.
True.
I think Hopper and Eleven have to wind up back together as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I hope
but
so.
But now he has to now adopt all these kids. So we went from no kids to now all the kids.
Although I did love the scenes of the parents all together. I had no memory of what parent belonged to what kid, but it was fun watching the parents. And that scene where the parents, like, you know, one mom is like, "You're all always welcome here." And the dad's like, "How many waffles are you eating?" Like,
so yeah, that's Mike's and Nancy's mom, who is one of my favorite moms on the show. And to bring Billy into it, who I loved Billy's character. Same. I loved that. You know, at the end, he broke himself out of all that horribleness and actually tried to save Elle and everybody. Yeah,
he did.
But, like, he did. But him asking the mom to go to the Motel 6 was, like, one of the top scenes. Like, it was just so funny.
Her realizing that she can't do it. It was very 80s. Yeah,
yeah.
80s movie.
Her makeup stayed on so well through all that water. I was like, okay.
And
whatever
and just
your name is.
Of Billy. I hate award shows. I don't think award shows make any sense. And so this probably won't happen. But I'm ready to give Best Supporting Actor in a TV series to the girl who plays Max just for her reading that letter to Billy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was so good.
That was my favorite episode.
And the way it could have been so cliched, but the way, like, it could have just been, "Oh, I always loved you. You were always a great big." No, she was like, "No, I hated you and you hated me, but we could have had something and you died nobly and I want to." It was.
Love your shitty little sister. Yeah, same.
Yeah.
It was
That's why the Kate Bush song, people are like, "Oh my God, I understand why now." I'm like, "Oh, you sweet summer child."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen to the lyrics. Like, that was the perfect song.
And that brings me back to another thing that I think really is important in this season and coming from third season. And that is that, you know, when one is talking to Elle and he says, like, "Think about a memory that you had that makes you sad, but also angry." And that's like where he gets his power from, is like anger and resentment and this stuff. But Elle learned, and like she uses that, you know, when she was like taken away from her mother, but she uses that, the like loving, happy memory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she learned from Billy. When that scene, like, I'm going to start crying just talking about it.
Oh, you're right.
When he, like, when she's in the, like, the limbo and he grabs her and she falls into his memories and she sees him on the beach with his mother. And then in that scene at the end of season 3, when she just starts talking about that memory and that, like, that loving, beautiful memory. I'm okay.
So
I'm all right. is what, like, snaps him out of it. And it's what, like, lets him, like, save her. And, like, I think that is going to be such a important thing going forward.
Yeah, I think so. One thing I just want to say about Max and Lucas. First of all, Lucas, we're talking about hair. Can we talk about his high top? Like,
I loved it.
So
it was
good. It was so 80s.
Perfect.
It was like, I'm watching, you know, not Kid and Play Kip a couple of years later, but like, there was a couple of, like, early rap stars who had that haircut. That was so good. But also,
I look like every member of Silk, even though that was the 90s.
On the one hand, like, I really like him and Max, and I hope they kind of get back together. I also understand why they're not, because, again, the puberty thing, Max still looks like she's 14. He now looks like he's 19. And, like, I think if we watched them kiss, it would feel weird.
Yeah.
But also, just again, to the show, I've been on a big kick of like, I want shows to avoid the low hanging fruit. I want you to do something different.
Yeah.
It would be so easy to make a focus of the scene of this season being that someone in the town, one of their parents, doesn't like the interracial relationship. And they just ignored that entirely. And I give them props for that as well. Like, just let
yeah.
these are two kids yeah. let them have their situation.
That's very true.
Yeah.
So like we've that. Gone on a while. There's a lot more we could talk about, I'm sure. But is there any kind of last things, like Mark, any of the last D&D references we didn't catch or any of the last things you want to bring up?
Give it to us, Mark.
I think I talked about all the D&D stuff that I really wanted to talk about. I think I'm good.
Cool.
Well, we're all going to come back together because there's two more episodes and they're going to be long as hell. And I cannot wait to wrap all of this up. And then now, Mark, just know season 5's coming. So when that comes, we could do episode by episode or we could see how we want to do.
Just let me know.
You are in now.
I am more than happy. I'm ecstatic to do that. So let me know.
Final thought. Steve is truly the best babysitter because if he didn't go check on Max, she would have been taken. Yeah. And he just keeps proving best babysitter.
Yeah.
I will agree with that.
Even he was a little more grumpy towards the kids, but like having like Eddie help explain like why him and Dustin are kind of not quite there, you know, it worked.
I love it.
Well, thank you both so much for being a part. Oh, sorry. Ashley, do you have any other last things about the episode you wanted to share?
No, cool. I'm good. I love this. This was great. Thank you, Mark, for coming
Mark, thank
so
you so much.
Much
for being able to join us. I think Ashley and I could have had a great conversation, especially because I was getting, I think, honestly, like there are choices the season made that I didn't love. It's not the season I'm probably going to be eager to talk about, but it was a season of eager to rewatch, but it was a season of television that had a lot of great moments and a lot of great writing. And I really appreciate that both of you really loved it because you helped me kind of remember a lot of the stuff. Because
It's not over yet.
We'll see. And maybe it's going to. Maybe they're going to make me happy that we spent so much time in Russia. I'm not there yet, but...
You're going to get your team up, baby. You're going to get your team up. Listen, the moment that they reconnected, I didn't give a fuck about how long we were in Russia because I was just so happy. He had
the
no
look
idea
on Hopper's
she
face
was
when he
there
saw her.
Or that she got there. Oh, my God. Yeah. I was so happy for them.
It was, and... If someone tells Eleven that he's alive before they meet, I will riot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want her to be tortured by it.
She needs to have that moment where...
Because she's so,
with you.
She's so alone, you know? And, like...
They'll figure something out.
How are they going to get out of Russia?
Who knows? Who knows? We'll see it. Well, anyway, thank you both so much. Mark, for people who are hearing you for the first time, they want to know more, they want to get back into D&D stuff, they want to hear your podcast, tell us about what you're up to.
You can find me at the Cast Die Podcast on the different social medias. You can listen to our podcast. We are an actual play D&D podcast. We play some other games too. You can listen to some audiobooks I've recorded if you look for me on Amazon.com. That's where those are. And stay tuned for more Stranger Things stuff here in Stranded Panda Land. So
if you want to really learn and just like be a part of a D&D campaign, if you've never really experienced it, I think that Mark's cast is the place to go because you really get to see what the different classes do. You really get to hear like what it's about. So like when I went in completely blank because I played once back years ago. So when I came in, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but to get an idea and just if you really want to go in and like not even just wow people, but no, Mark's cast is the way to go because you really learn.
That's very sweet. Thank you.
Well, and that to me, that if nothing else is the most beautiful reminder of just how far we've come, you know, from like the kids getting bullied all the time to now, hey, if you want to be able to talk about this cool thing at parties because everyone's talking about it, here's how you learn up about D&D. Like 20 years ago, I was always told, watch the game because that way you know what to talk about.
Right.
Now today it's make sure you know, are you a warlock or are you a wizard? You know, it's different. Are you a sorcerer? Different kinds of accessing magic. So it's important.
Yeah.
Ashley, you podcast every now and then. What are you up to these days?
So we have the boys on PandaVision. Just look for that because it is whenever we can record, since we're so busy. We have Obi-Wan Kenobi tomorrow live on Twitch. You can at the Zen Madman.
Not tomorrow because that I'm not going to get this episode up in time. But yeah, every Wednesday nights at 7:30 Central, 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central, Wednesday nights. And they're on twitch.tv slash Zen Madman. And then also you can find them on the Zen Mad Men YouTube channel, which if you go to, please like and subscribe. Help us get the numbers we need so that we can, you know, make more of an impact and make more podcasts for you. So, yeah, and I will have links in the show notes this to all the stuff Mark is doing, to all the different podcasts that Ashley is on. Of course, the best place to find all those podcasts is you go to the Stranded Panda Podcast Network, strandedpanda.com. All that contact information is there. And also, if you want to find more about the podcast I'm doing, especially the Star Wars Universe podcast, like we said, we're doing all the Kenobi stuff, but also we've got episodes coming up about The Boys. Actually, those episodes are going on PandaVision on Stranded Panda, but I've got episodes coming up about a lot of other great stuff. You can find all the episodes we did on Moon Knight. We actually got some experts in. We had a licensed psychotherapist who focuses on dissociative identity disorder. She came on and talked to us about Moon Knight and that situation. So a lot of great stuff happening there. Check out all my podcasts at theethicalpanda.com. There also you'll find all the ways to give us feedback. What are your questions? What do you think? What do you think about the conversation that we talked about?
Yeah, tag me on Facebook if you want feedback and we'll read it before the next...
Yeah, tag us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. Let us know, what are your theories about this? Who's your favorite D&D character you got to play? And how did this, how has it been like looking at this, you know, for you? So we're going to close out by actually telling that right after this last commercial break. All right, we're back. So quickly, because I mentioned your favorite commercial, your favorite D&D character, Mark's hand went up. So Mark, starting with you, what's your favorite D&D character you've ever played?
Oh man, that is really hard. There has been so many. I think the first one I ever played was a ranger named Greenleaf. This was like in 1989 probably, and my friend and I were the older brother was DMing us, and we spent all this time making the characters, drawing them badly. And then within like a half an hour, my friend's older brother like killed both the characters.
Oh no!
And so it was a very, you know, I think like the friends his age were doing something. So he was like, oh, okay, yeah, you guys got killed by a dragon turtle and I gotta go.
TPK.
Yeah, TPK. Thanks for playing. And then we just went back to like tracing pictures out of the monster manual.
I played that ranger when we played for an entire year. That campaign was very long. And
that got us through pan.
I was a half elf ranger named Ashlyn of Neverfarth because I was making fun of the Witcher because I was like, Yennefarth. And then I just, every time anyone asked me about where Neverfarth was, I made up a different story. So that was just, that turned into a whole gimmick. And I really like that.
Amazing.
We stopped playing right when I became that lightning sorceress, but I realized I would have liked that a whole lot more than arrow. I was like, what do you mean? I could be like fire, dungeons, thunder. So now I know.
My favorite, I'm going to confess, was not a D&D character. It was a Vampire the Masquerade character, but I love this story. He was named Father O'Leary. I was not very good at coming up with names, but he'd been a Catholic priest. He was made into a vampire. He still thought he was a priest, and he thought that, like, you know, he could rescue the souls of vampires.
Ooh.
And I did not have an Irish accent, thank God. But I did, I played this character with friends of mine from the University of California, Berkeley, while I was in grad school, because I used to be a pastor, and I was studying to be a pastor. So there was a point in time at which one of the other characters died, and my character offered to hold a funeral for that character. And we held a funeral. This is a live-action role-playing game, so we were all in costumes and dressed up. We held a full funeral for that character, and I had someone set up a camera to video it. And then I submitted that video for my class on ceremonies and got an A.
Yay!
So wow.
I was like, congratulations.
I get to do seminary homework. Like, tell me this is devil worship. I get to do homework for being a Christian minister as part of my playing a role-playing game. So
that's pretty awesome.
Can suck it. Exactly.
So. Satanism can fucking suck it.
I like it.
Sorry, Bo Burnham. Right, sorry.
Thank you both so much. This has been so much fun. Thank you to all of our listeners. Check out all the links. Check out all the podcasts. Write to us. Let us know what you think. And most importantly, be excellent to each other.
Bye.
Bye.